Telemetry News Now.
Welcome to another Telemetry News Now. I'm your host, Phil Gervasi, joined by Justin Ryburn. And returning to us again is Leanna Dotto, who was not with us for the past two episodes. We're so grateful that you're back with us to hear your beautiful commentary. Your insightful commentary. I mean, it could be beautiful as well. I don't know.
I'll try to make it as lovely as possible.
That's the first word that came to my mind when I thought of you, Leon. So take it for what
there
it is.
There we go. I am luminously attractive to all genders.
Right. So let's dive into the headlines.
I want to remind everyone that Phil has pointed out more than once, we have no desire for Telemetry News Now to become nothing more than a collection of hacks, vulnerabilities, and breaches. But this is a news roundup, and unfortunately, those things make up a big part of our news cycle these days, which is why I'm starting with a Network World article that reported that Cisco IoT wireless access points have been hit by a severe command injection flaw. For those who track these things, this is CVE-2024-20418, and it affects three products, the Catalyst IW9165D heavy-duty access point, the Catalyst IW9165E rugged access point, and the wireless clients that go with it, and third, the Catalyst IW9167E heavy-duty access wireless points. Now, a successful exploit could allow the attacker to execute arbitrary commands with root privilege on the underlying OS of the affected device. However, it's important to listen to this part. These devices are only vulnerable if they're running vulnerable software in URWB mode, which is ultra reliable wireless backhaul. The article that we've linked in the show notes tells you, first of all, how to check and see if you're in that situation and also how to secure your environment. So there we are, another hack.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about this vulnerability is that it has been exploited in the wild. So it's not just a theoretical thing. It looks like attackers actually have exploited it in some companies' environments. So definitely want to get out and patch this one if that's a possibility, depending on how long your change window cycle takes. Maybe checking to see how vulnerable you are. Like Leon mentioned, I think the exact command for those is show MPLS config. Like Leon said, we'll put that in the show notes. But show MPLS-config is the command you have to run to see whether your access points are operating in the ultra-reliable wireless backhaul mode and are vulnerable to this. Otherwise, you want to patch quickly so that you don't become one of the victims here.
Yeah, I think one of the only saving graces is that we are talking about rugged devices, and so they have a much smaller footprint than some of the other AP models that you're going to see deployed in huge numbers in campuses and organizations. Yes, I have deployed rugged APs in the past, but far, far fewer than your standard models. That's probably the only positive here is that the footprint, the blast radius is smaller than it could have been if it was the more commonly deployed models.
Yep. It's, it's just one of those facts of life of IT, of the IT world. You have to stay up on the news. Thank you for tuning in. And also you have to keep up with all the patches and the defensive measures. But enough about hacks, at least for the moment. We'll see if there's more coming. Next up is an article from TechCrunch, which reports that Signal, the messaging app, has gotten new video call features, making it a viable alternative, I'm doing air quotes, to Zoom, Meet, and Teams. Just as a summary, the popular messaging app has a heavy emphasis on privacy, but is adding a series of enhancements clearly designed to, I guess, try to compete with corporate meeting applications. Signal's had an encrypted video call option since 2020. But what's new here is that instead of one person creating a group and then initiating a call to that group, you can now just share a link with anyone, and then everyone can jump on, assuming, of course, that they have Signal. Now, I'm a big Signal user, and I enjoy it. I am not certain that I would abandon more traditional corporate meeting applications for Signal, but you know, it's 2024, almost 2025. Anything can happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think this smells to me a little bit like shadow IT, right? I think most organizations are unlikely to embrace Signal over whatever they've already adopted as far as Zoom, Teams, or Google Meet, which all, by the way, do encryption. I mean, I agree with you, Leon. I like Signal. I like their privacy stance and some of the encryption and things they do. But some of the other corporate meeting tools that organizations have at their disposal do also do that encryption. So I'm not sure we'll see a lot of organizations rushing to switch over to Signal anytime soon. This sounds like something that small groups of people, maybe within a certain team, adopt, but not something that becomes the corporate standard for a lot of companies.
I agree. I mean, Zoom is fantastic and I love Signal as well. I'm a big Signal user as well, like you said, Leon, but it is not going to be a replacement in the short term for Zoom, which is significantly more full-featured for a collaboration application for video chat and everything else. So I agree with you guys that it's cool, great. Small group is where I see it as well, Justin. I agree with you.
All right. We must be off our game this week on telemetry news now, because this is the third article in and we're just getting around to talking about AI. But the next article is from Network World. Spluly talking about AI, and Arista announced their financials this past week. Offers us a little glimpse into the AI world here, that being not so much models and new AI software development, but actually the hardware and the underlying networking infrastructure that powers a lot of these AI data centers that are being built. The article describes how the building of AI data centers with distributed GPU clusters is driving sales for Arista switching. We talked a couple episodes ago about how AI is building Arista features into CloudVision. But this article is really, like I said, more focused on the switching sales that are driving Arista's revenue. The article states that Arista has between 10 and 15 classic enterprise accounts that are trialing AI networks, but they have a very low number of GPUs involved in those pilots. That's compared to 5 hyperscaler trials, which Arista expects to grow to 100,000 GPUs per cluster and even more. You know, I've been saying for a while that while a lot of the early data centers were built using InfiniBand because that's the standard that NVIDIA supports, and they're the 800-pound gorilla in the GPU market, I wouldn't bet against Ethernet. Ethernet's been around for a long time. It's won out a bunch against a lot of different networking technologies, and I think over the longer term, as we start to see more distributed GPU clusters being built out, we'll start to see more and more Ethernet being built. And I think that's one of the things this article is pointing to, is that Arista is starting to get traction in these environments. They're starting to see a growth in Ethernet. Interestingly, the CEO, Jay Cherie Ullal, noted that a lot of these trials are actually using 400 gig Ethernet. The 800 gig ecosystem is just not there yet, but she does expect that they'll see a lot more of their trials leveraging 800 gig moving into 2025. So it'll be interesting to see as the Ultra Ethernet Consortium rolls out their 800 gig stuff.
So I will attribute the fact that this is our first AI article of the week because I was doing the first two and there's just no way. We all know that I like to bag on AI news. However, I will say this makes a lot of sense to me. Like of all things I can bag on, this is not one of them. And I really appreciate two aspects of the article. First of all, that Arista is investing time and money to make AI training and development faster and more efficient on the network side. Like they really are not just throwing heat and cooling and copper and things that just make it go faster. You know, they're really trying to take the existing infrastructure and make it more efficient. I appreciate that. And also that they're willing to talk about it during the trial phase. So it's not the usual, we discovered cold fusion, send us buckets of cash now. You know, like it's not that kind of hype. They're just saying, hey, this is what we're doing. This is where we're at with it. And we're excited. We expect good things, but who knows? So I really did appreciate the article for what it was.
Yeah, Arista does seem to be at the forefront of this very niche type of data center networking. And you know, data center networking is kind of the foundation of what Arista is all about. And I know that they had some announcements recently about like some efforts to move into the campus. But I mean, really, when I think of Arista, I do think of data center networking. And I think it's important to right size their type of customer and what this is all about in our mind's eye, because we're not talking about like Bob's Pet Store down the street or more accurately, like maybe a very large school district in your area. That has like a server room with a bunch of racks. No, we're talking about a very small subset of customers that are building artificial intelligence workloads. Maybe that's an AI company outright, or it's a very large enterprise that's willing to invest the time and money. And that requires very, very niche networking, 400 gig, 800 gig, and more speeds and feeds and, you know, mechanisms like scheduled fabrics and other things to reduce job completion time. From, you know, so you're not training a model for 18 months and you can bring that down to 6 months, make it more viable. Not to mention that, you know, Justin, I think you and I recorded a LinkedIn Live a while back, like a year ago, and we were talking about 10,000 GPUs and then like 32,000 GPUs, which is huge. And now it's like, it boggles my mind that now we're talking about 100,000 GPUs in these custom data centers to build and train these AI workloads. So another thing is that I do appreciate that Arista, they've always been, I mean, they are a for-profit company, but I do appreciate that they've always been kind of open with their platform and with working with others. And the same in this case, working with the UEC, the Ultra Ethernet Consortium, to move the needle forward in adopting Ethernet instead of InfiniBand, in adopting other standards. You know, this is a tiny little group of folks out there that are building these data centers and training models. But don't let that fool you. That's a small group that's going to impact the entire, you know, IT landscape and the entire world. And I think we already see that, of course.
Mm-hmm. All right, moving on. Sticking with the AI theme, the next article is from Reuters, titled "Juniper Networks Invest in AI Startup Recogni," I believe is how it's pronounced, in a $102 million funding round. The article goes on to say that Recogni is a startup focused on being an infrastructure supplier in the data centers, providing the compute that's needed to run the largest generative AI multimodal models. I personally had not heard of Recogni before this article, but there's so much investment in AI right now, that's actually not really surprising that I wouldn't have heard of them. There's a lot of money going into this area. What I found interesting about this one is that this company designs their own silicon and then works with TSMC, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, to produce them. That's what's called a fabless chip design, where the company that designs the chips, in this case Recogni, does not own their own fabrication and manufacturing facilities. So they're outsourcing the fabrication and manufacturing. They're just doing the chip design. They're actually presumably building GPUs that are going to compete with the likes of AMD and Intel and NVIDIA. It's, you know, we all know NVIDIA's got a huge lead in this market, so it'll be interesting to see if they can catch up. That seems to be the market they're going after, and Juniper's investing to help fund them.
Yeah. Now, see, this is more of the typical AI stuff that I like to ignore and sometimes make fun of and be snarky about. The most interesting part of this article was the fabless chip design part, that we've gotten to this point relatively quickly in the AI cycle. You know, this is not new. This is not unique. We've seen this on everything from pocket calculators to PCs, you know, where some organization designs a better chip but doesn't want to have to build it. And so the surprising part is that we're here with AI already, that it hasn't taken, you know, more years, I guess, to get to this part. But otherwise, you're like, okay, AI, here we go. I'll let someone else have the rest of my time.
Well, this is Juniper investing in an AI startup, and Juniper is a networking company. So that's interesting to me. What are they investing in here? They're investing in a company, a lot of money, by the way, that's building this infrastructure to do multimodal foundational model size AI workloads. So we're talking about large language models in the truest sense, as in like large language models, as opposed to like Mistral or Llama that's in the hundreds of millions or several billion parameters. We're talking about foundational models like Claude, GPT, things like that. So this is not messing around. This is not dipping your toe in the pool. This is getting into the realm of commodity LLMs that folks are going to use as a service. And when I say folks, I mean other companies building their own products around it, like a Google or a Meta. And again, also having this investment from a networking company, not exactly sure how to interpret that other than to say that, you know, based on the previous article, there are data centers that run this stuff. So there's a vested interest there as well to see that kind of growth. I don't know if there's some ulterior motive as well. And that's interesting to me because I don't believe that all of it is marketing hype. I think we are in the trough of disillusionment right now with generative AI, or at least with large language models in general, in this whole AI conversation. So I do believe that we are now looking out onto the horizon where we're going to start to see that. What's the next stage? Normalization? No.
Grief? Anger?
No, acceptance. No, no, no. I mean, in the Gartner
Hype
cycle.
That's your 12-step recovery plan.
Yeah, right.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Like when you're out of that trough of disillusionment, you go, I can Google it, or you can Google it, but it's like that whole normalization where we start to realize what are the real use cases when we start, and people stop talking about it. And I think that's where we're headed very soon as we start to develop actual use cases. So Yeah.
The slope of enlightenment is after the trough of disillusionment.
The slope of enlightenment. We are very enlightened.
Your Google is faster than mine today. You know, what I think is interesting about this being a networking company, Juniper, that's investing in this is, are they trying to compete with NVIDIA, right? Like you go back and you look at, I think I mentioned on one of the more recent ones we did where NVIDIA is not only building GPUs, they have the networking, they have software to train the GPUs and get them provisioned and ready to go. So they're building an entire ecosystem around their GPUs, right? And that's, in this case, InfiniBand-based, which blocks the likes of Arista and Juniper out from those environments because they don't sell InfiniBand, they sell Ethernet, right? So Arista and Juniper are obviously investing heavily in building out these Ethernet environments, and if what they're going to need is GPUs that play nice with Ethernet, and presumably the software and everything else that goes along, training those goes along with it, that strategy kind of makes sense to me that that's their play here, right?
I also wonder, I mean, again, snarky curmudgeonliness aside, I also wonder if Juniper may be thinking that they're going to build an LLM that is purely network-centric, that what we're seeing is people investing, and again, Phil, to your point, this is, you know, a large, capital L-A-R-G-E, large language model of network that is network-centric or network-focused, that they then want other companies that care about the network to build off of in the same way that other tools build off of ChatGPT and the rest. It's a thought of mine that you would invest this much if you were this deep into the network and wanted to capitalize on all the already sunk capital of what you know about the network and what you can know about the network because you have all these devices.
That's interesting. Interesting. You know, to design a large language model specifically for networking, that makes a lot of sense. Now, the thing is that there are a lot of folks, myself included, well, to a very small extent, that are working on using very small language models, like several hundred million parameters or 7 billion parameters. Think of something like a Llama or a Mistral, something like that. Training a much smaller model, because it's lower overhead, on your very specific domain data, and then using it in conjunction with other things like RAG, of course, and then, you know, tweaking it so you get very accurate results from your RAG system. RAFT, which is a combination of RAG and fine-tuning and other mechanisms as well, so that you are getting very accurate domain results, right, or accurate results about your domain, networking in this case, and more specifically your network, by using a very small model, and so that way there's way less overhead and effort to get there. But, you know, I never thought about that, Leon, until just now when you mentioned it. You know, could it be that there is a market to develop a network domain specific model that is ready to go for 90% of folks out there because most of networking is kind of like the same, and then you just need that last 10%, you know, onboarding a customer for your product, your AI for networking as a service product, that last 10% to get you there. So it's now ready for your specific network environment. That would be interesting. I have no idea if that's what Juniper is doing, but it's an interesting thing to think about here. So moving on, article in the Register from November 11th. But if you Google it, there's articles all over the place today because we had some big news out of Cisco. You may have heard of them, small network company out of Silicon Valley. Cisco recently unveiled, in Australia, actually, two Wi-Fi 7 access points, the CW9176 and the CW9178. And that's alongside a new licensing model as well. The whole idea is here that they're trying to unify the management of wireless devices across your cloud, your on-prem, your hybrid networks, all of it together. And incorporate both Cisco and Meraki management and security features. So, you know, in previous days, and I remember when I was turning a virtual and physical wrench, you would have to integrate those manually yourself if you're running both a Cisco environment, traditional Cisco environment, and a traditional Meraki environment. Even after the acquisition, they were still pretty siloed for quite a while. And so, I mean, obviously, integrating these two the way that they are now creates a much more global access point model that can maybe automatically adjust for regional requirements. As you know, with like radio frequency stuff, you have to take your geography into account and your country into account. And then also like seamless switching between cloud and on-prem management, right? If you're running controllers in the cloud or some sort of as a service or your on-prem stuff for whatever reasons. So let's talk about the features. Some of the key features of these new APs are built in. You don't see my hands right now, but I'm using heavy air quotes, AI enhanced capabilities. And so that would be something like Cisco's AI RRM for RF tuning, as well as advanced security measures such as AI native device profiling. So if you're not familiar with RRM, right, that's the radio resource management. And this is very nostalgic for me back in my wireless days. It stands for the radio resource management, and it's a way for the system, like your wireless controller, to manage your APs and specifically manage dynamically, right? It changes the radio settings and all the parameters on your APs because it's optimizing radio propagation, the RF propagation in that space based on whatever information it's gathering from usually clients and then other APs in the vicinity, right? And it's doing that to optimize performance and optimize radio frequency propagation, all that. So the AI part here in AI RRM is that this whole thing is offloaded to some sort of AI engine. I don't know what that means exactly. That also uses historical data. And I have to assume some sort of more sophisticated data analysis to make decisions about how to optimize RF settings. That's a lot of interesting stuff there because, you know, we're starting to add, these APs also add a greater capacity, have way more throughput. I mean, they're talking about speeds exceeding 40 gigabits per second, which I assume is lab tested. I can't imagine that, you know, out in the wild just yet. Better latency, all of that stuff. So you do need, especially in high density environments, stadiums, gymnasiums, schools, colleges, that kind of thing, you're going to need that type of really advanced RRM. I don't really know. A lot of cool stuff. But wait, there's more. They also are equipped with GPS. That's pretty cool. BLE, which is nothing new. That's, what is BLE? Bluetooth low energy. Ultra wideband capabilities. A lot of stuff. And of course, they're going to be supporting, or they're going to support SD access. So if you're running SD access, an SDA environment, you know, that kind of campus overlay, you can integrate it into that. So that's all the AP stuff. Now, as far as the licensing, Cisco's new model, Cisco Networking Subscription, it's supposed to streamline licensing by bundling software, hardware, and support into Unified Essentials and Advantage packages. I mean, supposedly that's going to help align renewal with your budget cycles and, you know, you co-term things more easily. I don't know. The AP stuff was interesting to me. I'm all about that. I have seen so many new licensing models rolled out from Cisco over the years, every other year, that you have to relearn. And I watch all of the videos and get all the presentation from the Cisco reps, only to have it change again 2 years later. So yeah, I'm really excited about the news about the APs, not so much about the licensing.
Yeah, I will say that I've always loved like what Meraki is, you know, and what they do. But I've honestly not understood why Meraki didn't become just Cisco a long time ago. And I also don't understand why Cisco has this habit of not exactly competing with itself, but creating product lines that appear to compete with itself. Again, like the Cisco and Catalyst and like that kind of stuff. So I will simply say that for me, this isn't it's about time thing. And I hope it ends up being easier and simpler for customers to buy the right gear, that they don't have to think about, well, you know, I got, you know, 50% Cisco and I wanted to get some Meraki, but if I get Meraki, I can't get the Cisco, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I hope it just makes it easier. I also want to point out the article did mention that there's an off-ramp for folks who have one or the other and they want to get to this new thing, but they don't have to, The old license will still persist for a while.
I mean, I used to joke when I was studying for the CCIE, which I never passed, by the way, but I used to joke with folks that they should make a CCIE licensing. Like that was another track just focused on that because it was, you know, convoluted and then it changed so often.
Get out your decoder ring.
Right. I do think, though, that one of the reasons, based on my experience working with them over the years, is that, you know, they have multiple BUs, multiple business units that operate somewhat independently or, you know, maybe very independently of one another. And I know that's, there were attempts to change that over time, you know, unifying the leadership and overall vision and direction. But I believe that is probably one of the contributing factors, if not a main contributing factor to why Meraki and Cisco kind of existed separately even after the acquisition for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think that strategy actually makes sense when they first did the acquisition, right? I mean, when Meraki was acquired by Cisco, they had, as you know, I'm saying, a really good product, they had a really good following in the market. It takes time for Cisco to figure out where is this going to fit into the broader parent organization, right? Into which BUs. They have a history, and they're not the only one, of having some wars going on between their BUs that have competing products that have some overlapping use cases, some overlapping features. When I worked at Juniper, we had, you know, some of the same things. There were some that, you know, if you wanted, you know, MPLS backbone is going to be the, you know, the service provider BU products, the MX and that kind of stuff. If you wanted enterprise switching, well, there was some overlap between the QFX and the EX. It's like, which one do I use in which environment? That's just, I think, natural as you grow and scale as a hardware vendor, you're going to have some overlap. But yeah, I think, you know, integrating it, it's time, as Liam was saying, right? They, I don't remember what year the acquisition was. I want to say like 2010 or 11. I mean, it's been a number of years. So it's probably
it's been ages.
Yeah, it's been ages. So I think it is like, you know, and it's also interesting that they're applying AI to managing the RF, as you were saying, Phil. It's something that Mist was, well, I guess still is, really good with the products that Juniper has acquired, right? And if you look at what Juniper has done since they acquired that company, they've combined it with Apstra, kind of tried to combine it into their campus and data center switching so that you have this integrated ecosystem experience as a customer. I think that's where Cisco's going with this, right? You can buy the Catalyst switches, you can do SD access to manage it all, you can do all your wireless, like they're trying to combine everything. That's why a company buys into a particular vendor and gets locked in, using air quotes here, to a vendor, is because it gives you simplicity in your operations when you have these things integrated. That's what customers want if they're gonna you know, buy from a single vendor.
Yeah, right. So I saved our next headline for last on purpose, because it is probably one of the most important headlines of the week. Now, I say that in jest, but it is actually sad. A headline out of The Verge from November 7th, Elwood Edwards, who is the voice behind AOL's You've Got Mail, which I'm sure all of us remember, dies at age 74. So very sad. So Elwood Edwards is the iconic voice behind AOL's You've Got Mail and others. He passed away just recently after a long illness. And interestingly enough, his journey with AOL is not like he worked at AOL as an engineer. It began way back in 1989. What happened was his wife, who worked at Quantum Computer Services, which later became AOL, it learned that the company needed a voice for its software. You know, they were just looking for some kind of a voice. Apparently Mr. Edwards has a broadcasting background. And so he recorded some phrases like welcome, files done, goodbye, and also the very famous You've Got Mail on a cassette tape, if you remember cassette tapes. I very much remember them. And he recorded them for $200. It was just a test. But they became incredibly popular. And if you remember using a computer in the early to mid 90s, those sounds, those words, and his voice became synonymous with the early internet experience. So what's interesting, and I had no idea until I started researching this, is that Edwards actually made some appearances on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. He was on The Simpsons, which doesn't surprise me because I think everyone's been on The Simpsons. And he even worked as an Uber driver at one point. So very sad news, but also just something interesting for our industry and then also for many of us considering our advanced age.
So first, I want to point out there's a Cleveland connection because Mr. Edwards worked at WKYC, which is the local Cleveland NBC affiliate here. He was a graphics supervisor. He also worked as a camera operator. He was both in front of and behind the camera, although most of his work for most of his career was behind the camera. But beyond that, I think there's an interesting metaphor here about the technology that we know and come to love. And it doesn't just have distinctive sounds, which it does. I think we all have a set of sounds that means that whether it's the clacky keyboard, you know, I associate with the old IBM PC clacky keyboard, but other people have, you know, or, you know, various logins or sound, whatever it is, right? That the technology itself has distinctive sounds, but also there's a feeling that we begin to associate with that sound that is incredibly personal. It's not that everybody feels the same way about the clacky keyboard noise or any of those. And there's a reality that no technology lasts forever. But sometimes the sounds and feelings outlive not only the tech, but the people who were involved in that technology in the first place. So I wonder about how Mr. Edwards' kids and grandkids will feel years from now when they continue, whether they're watching that movie or any sort of you know, throwback that era, if they're going to suddenly realize, oh my gosh, that's grandpa.
Yeah.
You know, like they're going to hear his voice come at them from unexpected directions.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. My personal story here is, my family got our first home PC, which was a Dell. Doesn't really matter for the purpose of the story, but, I modified the sound that it would make when an email was received to that very sound, the You've Got Mail sound. And I remember getting in trouble with my parents for that because I was hacking around changing things on the computer. My dad sat down to check his email and made these weird sounds. It's like something just etched that voice. His voice is etched in my my memory from that, for getting in trouble for one of my early hacking episodes, I guess you would say, as a kid. So
yeah, you know, that's actually an interesting thought. All of those different sensory inputs that were part of our formative years, if you grew up in the in the 80s and 90s with early computers, of the sounds of early keyboards and the look of an 8-bit animation on the screen and, smells and the way things feel, all that stuff. I don't know what smells are. I guess maybe like the smell of the dust burning off the CPU or something when you power on a beast of a machine. I really don't know. But in any case, something interesting to discuss perhaps in a later episode when we have more time. But for now, I would like to move on to upcoming events. Very important. We have several upcoming events in November and December that we want to highlight. So starting off with November 19 to 21, we have Microsoft Ignite in Chicago. Justin, I believe you are going to be there.
Nope, not going to be able to make that one. Unfortunately, overlaps with AutoCon, which you're going to talk about here in a minute.
Ah, that's right. Well, speaking of AutoCon, November 20 to 22 is AutoCon 2 in Denver. So yes, Justin, I knew you were going to be there along with me, but I know you like to piggyback things and you're always on the road. AutoCon 2 is the next iteration of the Network Automation Forum's conference, where I think they sold out in like 2 or 3 days. Maybe it's not 2 or 3, but they sold out very quickly. So a very interesting event to keep an eye on for the future. We have on November 20 and 21, Mobility Field Day 12 in Silicon Valley, but live streamed as well. So make sure you go to the Tech Field Day website for the live stream on those days. December 2 through 6, we have AWS reInvent in Las Vegas. Leon, I believe you're going to be there for that one.
I'm going to be at reInvent. Absolutely. Yeah.
I'll be there for that one as well.
And we're going to have lots of goodies too.
Yeah. And that's why I said that about the other big thing, presents. Justin, because you seem to be at all the events at all. Yeah.
Yeah.
But make sure to go visit the booth and say hi to Leon and Justin if you're there. On December 5th is the Nebraska Networking User Group, NENUG, in Omaha. For more information about other events like that one and others in your area, go to the USNUA and take a look there. On December 12, I will be in Chicago for the Tech Talk Summit to talk about AI along with our partners Myriad 360, which should be fun. I love talking about AI these days and dispelling some myths. So for now, thanks so much for listening. Those are the headlines.